It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to the Woodman Corner. I'm Graham Brown and welcome to your weekly podcast that can offer you some escapism for quite how much dirge West Bromwich Albion are offering up at the moment by talking about West Bromwich Albion of a different era. I think we've got another great podcast lined up for you today. I've been talking to Dave Chatliner, who many of you might know, but for those of you who don't, he's Baggy Bird. He's been Baggy Bird for 17 years. He's got some great stories. We're going to talk to him about how he's actually played a significant part in some of the massive moments that our club's had in recent years, about what it's like to be a full-sized man who dresses up as a bird for a living, and he's been around the players, so some of the personalities, what he thinks and so on. That's going to be great. I think hopefully a lot of you have come to know us now. Woodman Corner is about an alternative view. We don't spend a lot of time talking about football, really. We spend a lot of time talking about nostalgia, things gone by, trying to bring you stories that you don't have. Hopefully you like it. If you don't, as I keep saying, please get in touch and let us know what you think. We are going to have a little moment to talk about football today. So after we've spoken to Dave, we're going to come back. We've lined up a few Albion fans. We're going to talk about who we think are our biggest disappointment of the year so far and what we would hope from them in the year to come. So keep an ear out for that. That'll depress you later on. But thanks for joining us. And this is myself and my colleague, Joe Chapman, talking to Dave Chanlat or Baggy Bird.
Okay, so we're here now with Dave Chanlat, who is Baggy Bird and seems to have forever been as such. Dave, thanks ever so much for joining us on Woodman Corner. So we'll start off with a question we ask absolutely everyone. Tell us your favourite story about West Bromwich Albion.
Personally, it's probably Sunderland away. The 1-0 Kumas game, for a couple of reasons, really. Obviously, it was a massive, massive game for us. I think if we won, we're practically promoted.
Yeah.
I think it was the second time round. And obviously, it was, looking back, it was probably like you guys said earlier, Tony Pulis' display, backs against the wall. Sean Gregan was immense that day, and we nicked it 1-0. Me personally, I had a cheeky little touch. Them days you could bet on back in the Albion, I always used to back 1-0 Kumas. And obviously when Lloyd Dyche, 90 mile an hour, I'm screaming, just square it, just pass it, and I've gone ballistic. Obviously, I think it was about 18-1 out of 10 on it. So happy days all round, really, for me personally. Stuff happened in that game, obviously, at half time. Myself and Edzie, who's done Baggy Bird, or Albie, now for, I think he's done it about 21 years. Megson's called us in at half time and pushed us in the dressing room and basically showed all the lads in that squad that this is sweat and dedication to the cause. It was quite a warm day out there, and obviously we're dripping of sweat after competing in a penalty shootout against their mascot at half time. I basically bottled it, pushed Edie in front of me, who again was Baggy Junior, as it was called then.
Yeah.
Albie didn't exist.
That's right, yeah.
And he's pushed us in there. Andy Johnson's given us a bit of grief and, gaffer's pet and teacher's pet and all that, but obviously Megson was brilliant for us, and that's probably my most memorable game.
It's an amazing thing to have been involved with. When you think about the nature of that game, I think it's about, that's got about 78 minutes in this, so it was 0-0 at half time. You've actually played a part in the team, whatever it is. I mean, Megson bothered to call you in. It must be an amazing thing, for a relatively young man, a key game. You were part of it, weren't you?
Well, I wouldn't say it was me, down to us. Megson was good. Obviously, people have heard stories about, the first time they went up, he got players, wives involved, and he was brilliant for us personally as mascot. He saw us at away games with black bin bags and dressed, not great, normal, not associated gear with West Bromwich Albion. He got us tracksuits, he got us bags, training bags. you know, to carry the baggy birdie. And he made the whole club for me a little bit more.
And you were saying, Megson, you were part of the Gary Megson tactics, weren't you? Talk us through it.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. yeah, there were certain games at home. Obviously, we was instructed to stay out in costume, especially towards the end of, you know, end of the season, whether it be relegation or staying up. Against, I think it was Rotherham. Obviously, you know, we've stayed out. We've watched that ball cross the line. We've celebrated.
I still have nightmares about it.
I think we'd have won at 14 in a row. I think our record would have been. I think that was a, obviously we ended the game 1-1. I think, but yeah. If you look back, I think it would have been a. You know, we finished that season on absolute fire.
Yeah.
You know, and we probably wouldn't have needed the Igor Bellis penalty had that goal been given. You know, but you know, even then, you know, it makes it sweeter. Obviously, against the noisy neighbours now. You know, getting them points and you know getting over the line. But from the Rotherham game, Megson called us in and basically said, "You stay out. We want you guys." You know, to stay out there, make as much noise as you can. Obviously, fans and stewards were telling us to, you can't stand here. But obviously,
Gary says it.
I'm 20 years old. I'm petrified of Gary Megson. so yeah, whatever he said went. To be honest,
and that was you out when the players were out, during the crowd up. You know, when it's most important, he wanted you there to make sure that the crowd were up for it.
Yeah, definitely. And the atmosphere then, I don't think personally, you know, our fans are good, but. That period then was special. You know, you look at the sides that have gone up now, Huddersfield and that. I think when we first went up, you'll never recreate that as.
It got wars, didn't it? 2002. We're the best possibly. Attended team anyway.
Yeah, possibly. You know, and it was unexpected because when I was at school, obviously we were terrible. Surviving relegation, I took so much abuse from Villa and because I went to a school in Bearwood in Smethwick, so. A lot of my mates growing up were Villa fans, and you had a couple of Wolves fans, but...
And how old are you?
I'm 32.
That was a similar thing. So I'm 36, and I mean, I'm from Oldbury originally, but I moved to Sutton Coldfield. So same thing, absolutely circulated for Villa fans. And I mean, we were... I watched the first game in 1987. We were just dire for that whole period. And it's like, it's hard to remember then. I mean, we were actually better than Villa now. I remember for the first like, 15 years of my life thinking, we'll never be better than Villa. We'll never just beat Villa. I don't even think I'll ever just score against them.
That's right.
No, we're better than him.
I remember going there as a fan, sitting there in the FA Cup. I think Colin Moore got two.
Yes.
Simon Grayson scored the first goal. And I sat in the Villa end. And I was about 13. I was just hammering them, saying, oh, they've got some... Because I was obviously in the Villa end, I was pretending to be a Villa fan. And Simon Grayson's terrible. And then he scores from like 30 yards, and I'm thinking, oh, just shut your mouth. they've beat us 4-0, and I'm just thinking, you know. And obviously going to school on a Monday, you get the stick, you get, you know. And now, like on Facebook, I'm a big fisherman. I love fishing Villa fans and Wolves fans because I remember the days when, like you say, we were miles away, and there's some Albion fans now which I can't. Get me head round. 17 years, we've never seen anything other than Premier League football.
I know, yeah.
And I think that's where sometimes the expectation comes from. I'm like you guys, you know, I never seen Regis, Cunningham. You know, I feel a bit deprived of that.
Yeah.
As I talk about players like, for me, Kumas, Dorans, I love them kind of players who get you off your seat. And I think potentially now they've got very good players now at the Albion.
Yeah.
They've got a good, you know, good. Nucleus.
Well, in Field side. And Burke, you've got players. Yeah, you've seen these kind of top 100 young players in Europe and blah blah. It's not very often Albion have had players in that. You know, that's a play, young players of potential. You throw Lika in there and blah blah blah. You know, there's some potential in it,
yeah,
isn't
definitely.
There?
I mean, speaking outside of this, I used to work at Willingsworth School for Samuel Leisure Trust, and. Basically, the Albion Academy used to be based there. It was a school of excellence back then, so years and years ago. I think I was about 16, 17. And you look back now, you had... I used to speak to Andy Boothroyd and Dan Ashworth in like and Mark Naylor, who obviously now is still there now,
yeah.
In like a small hut. And I'm thinking, how many of them players would have started at Willingsworth? And now you look at the academy and the foundation that they've got there. You know, we're probably... academy wise, we punch well above.
Yeah, one of the top 10 clubs in the country, really. So this is always a bit of a. You're the first person we've had on it that really kind of has a proper association with Albert, so you're probably a bit more careful with this. But this is always a bit about me trying to get people to tell that behind the scenes stories and blah, blah, blah. So I'm aware you've got to be careful and so on. But can you tell us about like players, you know, any stories you can remember about players, the players you got on with, the funniest ones, the ones you maybe didn't? What can you tell us without getting in trouble?
Club wise, do you know, honestly, I've been there 16, 17 years, and Baggy Bird personally, you know, we've had no issues with anyone. There's been opposition players. Tony Warner, he smashed Baggy Bird's head off.
Oh yes, he did.
Picked it up, put it on the net. It was actually easy. I think it was Baggy Junior.
I was there.
And
yeah.
He picked his head up and he booted it on the net in the Smedic end, because we used to do obviously fake handshakes and schoolboy errors. Yeah. But from our point of view, player wise, you know, that I think as a club, because they've always gone forward. You know, we've always every year I think we've kind of improved, and your standard of player gets better. But I don't think there's any. You know, it's a boring answer, but I don't think there's any.
What about the kind of the big personalities? I've heard you mention Andy Johnson a few times. Get the person he's someone you got on with. Who are the people you sort of got on with best? They were the most fun that you could kind of banter with you the best.
Yeah, I mean that era, obviously. AJ's brilliant. Jono's good. Peter Odenwinge, he's another one for me. He's brilliant. He's I'll run the Albion supporter side, and a few years back he sponsored us to run our side, and without him, you know, obviously football's expensive. He didn't have to do it. I don't even know how it came about. Even when he moved to Stoke, you know, he took me tickets out to go and watch him at Stoke. You know, for me it's a shame the way it finished, because even now he's still our leading scorer, I think Moz is quite close. But you know,
I think history.
In the space of 2.5 years as well, that he got those goals. He's it wasn't rapid, like he did it over
quick,
a.
Quick, you know.
I think history's going to be very, very kind to Peter Edmund at the Albion. It's going to be a long while before we get a better Premier League striker than he is, you know, for £2.5 million. And you know, the nature of the way he went, it's probably overbordering. You know, I think most people are kind of coming around to him. I think once he retires.
Yeah, I mean, to score three at Wolves, you know, I never for me the picture.
Yeah,
you know, it's iconic with the match ball under his hand and the three. You know, they're memories that you can't. You know, I mean, that could have been the last 20 minutes of that game. It could have been. Where did he go? He went so quick. You speak to Wolves fans, and it went. You know,
just dragged on.
It took an hour. Whereas for us, you're just thinking like, you know, Simon Cox and
just add another 10 minutes.
Yeah, just keep playing. Like, and I think for me that day when they played against Wolves. The unsung hero was Marc-Antoine Fortuné. He was brilliant that day.
Yeah. You
know, he did everything but score. Yeah. You know, Odenwinge gets the win. And I think, looking back now, you know, that side there, you know, Malumbu, he was a character. You know, the stuff. Claudio Jakob, you asked me about players. Claudio Jakob's brilliant.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's so funny.
Well, that was one thing I was going to touch on, actually. You talk about Andy Johnson and that dressing room. Is there a difference? Because obviously it's a different era now, really. You're talking 15, 16 years on. And I suppose footballers are painted a certain way, aren't they?
Yeah.
But you know, even if you're from the outside looking in as a football fan, you just have to look at Clary Jakob to see
his
character.
Yeah, he's funny. Main dealings I had with him was through Tommy Langford.
Yes.
Good mates with Tom. Really good. You know, boxing. Love my boxing. And basically, Jacko, the kit man Jacko and Gaz, they basically said, you know, Tom had just won his British belt. And he said, oh, we want to do something for Tom. What can we do? I said, well, his favourite player is Claudio Jakob. So he said, we'll sort out, you know, we'll get you down the training ground and Tom can have a cup of tea with Claudio. And he was just so funny.
Yeah.
But some of the stories, he was like, he's a madman.
I think his
English is a myth. I think his English is very good.
Like Pochettino, pretending
you
can't.
They don't speak the language, but you know, ultimately, all the players at the club now, you know, they've got Jake Livermore. You know, just little things where when we basically go out the tunnel at 2:25, so we're in the tunnel at the same time as the players, and they'll all go out the way to say hello to you. You know, we're just. The way the tunnel's constructed at the Albion, we're slightly down, so they have to go out of their way to come and say hello or shake your hand, which they all do. Jack Livermore's another one who, you know, he comes across a nice guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So is there anyone you've ever not got on with, any Albion player?
That's well in the past that you can kind of, don't worry about digging out, yeah?
Nah, not really. Genuinely, I'm not, yeah. I think if people can't get on with a furry mascot, you've got problems, haven't you?
That's right. It probably says more about you than it does about the furry
bird a cuddle. You know what I mean?
So tell us about the nature of being a baggy bird. You know, what's it like in there? How do you prepare? What are you wearing under there? What's it like walking around with all that stuff on? Is it heavy?
Yeah. The most two common questions when people find out that you're a mascot are, does it get hot in there? And have you ever had a fight?
Yeah.
And the answer is, yes, it's very hot, and no, I haven't. And there, you know, ultimately, the two most, you know, top family fortunes, top five questions to ask a mascot.
You must get asked these two next questions very often. Do you get paid?
Yeah, the club, obviously, it's a job. So,
yeah. So. You won't be retiring on it, I wouldn't imagine.
No, it's a hobby.
And, what was my other? Oh, yes, the mascot race. So tell us how well you've represented the Albion.
Yeah, we've. To be fair, the mascot race is a bit of a weird one, really. The Hunting Tree mascot race, which is the main one, I haven't done that for years and years and years because they move the goalposts on what the criteria to get in.
Yeah.
So you have to raise money for a certain charity, which for me, you know, as Baggy Bird and mascot, I've got no problem, you know, doing any charity work. I do a lot. With regards to, you know, if anyone asks me to do events, if I can do them, I genuinely go and do it, because for me, although we get paid to the Baggy Bird, the other side of the job is, can you do school fights and that? And as long as the club are aware of it, you know, it's no drama on that, we'll go and do it. Whereas the mascot race, they move the goalposts on it, where they ask you to raise X amount for
certain
charities, and you know, where for me, we've all got charities that are close to us, which we'd rather the money go to.
That mascot race they did once where they whip out some bloke and run the 100 metres in about 10 seconds.
That's the last one we did it.
Was it really? Yeah.
And the mad thing is, you could bet on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you could bet on it. And I've never seen the queue of people to go and collect winnings. I've never seen anything like that. I think I was 33 to 1. And they never seen me run. I'm thinking, where they got this from? I'm probably a 5,000 to 1 outsider to win that. But I'm worse than Leicester. And then people knew though that mascot race. He was an ex England athlete who was a 200 meter hurdler.
Yeah.
So like Cyril Aswan, the guy from Bradford. You know, people have tried to smash him at the start and got nowhere near him. Like, because they knew he was quick. He had no costume on. He ran in a fox outfit. And that was another reason why we never did it again.
So, as I understand it, there's three reasons why you were a lucky omen. So, you've already told us the Sunderland story, and you've already told us how essentially it was you that got us promoted in 2002. Tell us about Bradford. How you became our... it wasn't Eagle Ballast that turned around our Pelly Fortunes, it was you.
I back then I used to go everywhere with the Albion, and I've seen us miss so many penalties. Obviously, we... people like Dave Holloway and John Homer, I used to go on the coaches and sit on there, and I'm pretty certain it was the Preston away game. We might even have missed two that night. I think Scott Dobie, Jason Roberts got injured. I remember it because I'm thinking, you know, we're close to going up here, and Jason Roberts got injured, broke his foot. I think it was that year, and Dobie's had a penalty, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to watch this now, and he smashed it against the bar. I think they've gone up there and they've beat us 1-0. Alexander scored a penalty for them. And I'm thinking, we're just not going to go up here. So from that moment then, I watched that penalty. From that moment then, I never watched another penalty. So when Albion win a penalty, Bob Taylor, obviously, he's a legend, Bob Taylor, you know. He plays the game, wins the penalty. I'm standing on the side in the Bradford, effectively in the Bradford end, because we haven't got tickets for the game, because you know we don't need them, but then Baggy Bird, you don't know whether you're going to stay out or whatnot.
You're one of the thousands of people with obscure black country accents in the
Bradford. Well, I wasn't even in their end. There was like a little bit of a cut out at the side where it was unconstructed. It was like an unconstructed stand, so we just stood there. So obviously, we win the penalty, and I'm thinking, I'm not watching this. And I'm in a white jumper, and I think you can see me on the TV. And I've got my head down. I'm thinking, I'm just going to watch their fans, because if they basically jump up, he's been saved. So, takes a penalty, and there's like pockets of people just jumping up in the Bradford end, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? Like, and obviously, then you realise how many Albion fans are in the
Bradford end. Right.
You know, people going about Chelsea fans going in the Albion end to watch them win the league. We was just a bad at Bradford because it was, yeah. You know, there were so many Albion fans in that end. And then obviously at the end of the game, my old man's driving, I think it's a Monday, I think, at the time, and he's got a sunroof. And I've got Baggy Bird and we're stuck in traffic, not going anywhere. I said to him, oh man, I'm just going to get the head on and put it out the sunroof. So I've gone out the sunroof and my old man's beeping the horn, everyone's like, you know. So I think that day everyone knew. There was no way they'd.
Yeah.
There's no way on earth. It's just. They'd get beat up.
I mean, I wasn't there. I was slightly too young to remember that, but all I hear are amazing memories of Valley Parade.
Yeah, you know, it's brilliant.
That. I think it was just the relief as well that, you know, Igor Ballas was about the 93rd player to try and score a penalty for Albion that season.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, they've given it to Ballas.
The funny story as well, obviously, he's, you know, everyone knows it. He's basically just sitting there. I think he took one previous for us, though, in the Carling Cup, I think. I think he'd already took one for us.
That's right, yeah.
I think he took one and scored it.
Just because he was so quiet, wasn't he?
Yeah, like, you know. And
there he is.
He's just a
coolest player. You know,
so you've seen a lot of the Albion over 32 years of 17 years of playing this part. Any favourite player from that time? Is it someone who would stand out as the person you've most enjoyed watching?
Most enjoyed watching? For me, I think Kumas. Kumas for me.
I might go
Kumas or Dorans. You know, obviously, it's mad because them two players now, you know, 6 weeks ago, they wouldn't have got in. Into a Tony Pulis side where the mix of Tony Mowbray for me is probably my favourite manager to watch, although Megson was the most successful.
Yeah,
Tony Mowbray's football was the best
title winning season
for me to go and watch. You know, people go on about Wolves now doing what they're doing. You know, I say we did that 15 years ago. Well, not 15 years, we did that 7 years ago.
Yeah,
without money,
2007,
without loans. The majority of our players, you know, what Wolves are doing now, we watched that 10 years ago.
Yeah,
you know,
they're always a great side. Corrin and Tashir.
We had the best midfield in the world.
Yeah,
genuinely did. And we had a song about it.
Great song.
As it went down.
And obviously, I think Mowbray was keen signing Morrison and Brunt.
Yeah.
And you look now.
That legacy's still there.
They're still there. So, you know, even them two players, you know, it's tough. Kumas probably, and Dorans. Morrison and Brunt.
I think I'd go with that. It's such a joyful person to watch. Remember, were you at. Forest away that when he scored
that was
two. I've never ever seen anything like it.
It was
just a complete
that goal
joy.
From the run from his own arm.
Yeah.
I think he finished Des Walker that day. Des Walker both.
Yeah.
He literally, you know.
But you'd have got some insight into his person. I mean, the thing, and I've got a feeling I'm wrong with it. I always thought that the problem with Jazz Gibbons is he had all this talent, but he was an insular personality. Probably couldn't do it on the big stage. But is that right?
To be fair, we forgot about this. To be fair, I had some. Decent night out with Kumas and Joe Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
In Stourbridge Thursday nights, which probably should have gone, you know, shouldn't have happened. But obviously, you talk about Kumas. You know, he lived in Hagley for a little while, and I was from Halzowin then, and I just bumped into Joe Murphy and Kumas in Lloyds on a Thursday night, thinking, what are you doing? What are you boys doing here? I've got a game on Saturday. I mean, I was just working normal, you know, 9-to-5 job. And I'm thinking, he's a footballer, isn't he?
Premier League players at the time, weren't they?
I think he was just... maybe just short of Premier League, I think.
Yeah.
We'd just gone down that year.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, when Joe Murphy was there.
When Murphy was there. But, you know, they were good. And Lloyd Dyer, he was another one where you just didn't know what you was going to get with him. He was just... He's still playing now, and he's, you know, effectively, people going about the academy. He's come from our academy, and he's had a good... You know, if he was to offer every boy at the academy now a career like Lloyd Dyer... I'm sure they take it, you know, Premier League footballer, playing the Premier League.
Still playing now
in his 30s. But Kumas for me, just that game at Forest, he'd just do stuff that no one, you know, he'd just beat a player and then he'd go and beat a player again. Like, a bit like Jonathan Greeny, but then he'd have a bit more end product.
Well, Andy Johns was talking about him, wasn't he? He said, you know, Jono said. In terms of the talent,
you probably know he's absolute biggest advocate. He's saying, well, "Who's the best player you think you've seen across last 20 years?" And I said, "Well, reluctantly, it sounds boring, but I'd have to say Johnny Evans." But to be honest, the most talented player, even though he's playing in the least talented team of the last 20 years, realistically, is Kumas. And I guess to say, you just wonder whether or not he could have took it further. He seems to me like a player who should have played top four.
Yeah, I think he'd probably, I think he probably could have. I mean, I read a lot of footballers' books, and in Gerrard's book, he mentions him. He basically says, you know, as a kid, there was me and him playing in the same midfield, and Kumas was miles better than me.
Yeah.
Stephen Gerrard's words, obviously. he said Kumas was my, but I had, you know, a bit more
drive,
a bit more about myself. Like, yeah. He said, I knew what I didn't do very well, and I improved on it. And we were privileged to watch people like Kumas. I mean, the stuff we'd do now, you know, if you used to YouTube Jason Kumas, you know, the skills at Wolves in the playoff games.
Yeah.
You know, he's just absolutely.
Mowbray gave him a new lease of life, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he had his problems with Brian Robson, and he came back under Mowbray, and just that season, if we'd have been in the Premier League, of course, he'd have stuck with us.
Oh, definitely. And I think, like, for me, people like Tony Mowbray, they're managers that you'd want to play for. I mean, we had a little bit of dealing with Tony Mowbray, obviously doing Baggy Bird and Eadie doing Albie, but you know, them kind of players. And I think now with Alan Pardew, I think he's probably a manager that you'd want to play for, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he comes across as if he says the right things, the fact that he's kept Sam Field involved. You know, I'm not saying that they're going to play exactly the same football as what they played with Tony Mowbray, but I think as a person.
Yeah.
You know, I think
there's a middle ground, isn't there?
Yeah,
you don't have to be one way or the other.
Yeah, I just think, like, the players, you know, Kumas wanted to play for Tony Mowbray.
Yeah.
And I think these players probably want to play for him.
That's right. He has a history of being someone that the players have gone on with. Dave, thank you ever so much for joining us here. You were top of the list when we wanted to get people in, so we really appreciate it. And yeah, thank you for that.
No problem.
Okay, so thank you to Dave Challoner, who is a confirmed friend of Woodburn Corner, and someone we're really, really keen to get on. We've had a few footballers so far, but we're really keen to get the personalities around the club involved, telling their stories about the Albion on the podcast. So please, if you are a personality around Albion, or if you're a fan, do get in touch. You can find us at Woodburn Corner on... You can find us at Woodman Podcast on Twitter, or get in touch with me, Graham Brown, or Joe Chapman if you want to come on and tell your stories about being an Albion fan. So as I say, we don't like to dwell on the monotony of being an Albion fan too much, but thought with the end of the year coming up, it might be a good time for myself and some of the other Albion fans in the office to have a look at what they think has been the biggest disappointment of what's been a disappointing season so far. So I'll kick it off, and then we'll move around to some of the others. It's quite a difficult task, really, because there's been so many disappointments. But the one I'm going to go for is Gregor Krukowiak. Why would I put him as the biggest disappointment ahead of the likes of Jake Livermore and Rodriguez and lots and lots of others? Well, quite, because I expected just so much of him, really. Yeah, Krukowiak has got an incredible pedigree at his time in Sevilla. The massive fee that he commanded to go to PSG, the successes that he's had with Poland, and the fact that his game just seems to be so tailor-made for the Premier League. He's a bombastic box-to-box midfielder that can do a bit of everything, that's not likely to be knocked about by the physicality of the game and that sort of thing. I was so excited. When we signed him, he appeared to be the... He appeared to sort of open the door to a new Albion, you know, a new possibility. We've got a lot of money and we're able to bring in quality players, and we might be a mid-sized club from the Black Country, but look who we brought in. And, you know, he's never really done anything. I still would come on to contest that he should probably be given a greater chance, but he's never really, really shown it for the Albion, and frustratingly, he's had a few good games for Poland while he's been with us. So that's why I would say it's the biggest disappointment. I actually don't think he's played as poorly as most of his midfield counterparts, but he's not playing. Pulis had stopped playing him. Megson didn't put him on for a second in the first two games of Pardew. He hasn't seen a spot. I can only assume this is for non-footballing reasons, but regardless, whatever it is, I'm naming Krukowiak as my biggest disappointment because he should be there, should be our best player. It just seems like an opportunity wasted.
I think the thing that's really frustrated me watching West Bromwich Albion this season has been their inability to hold on to leads, and it's something that's unfortunately
kind of continued throughout the course of the campaign so far. One thing that separated Albion from a number of other teams in the Premier League last season was their ability to win games, and if not win them, then they wouldn't lose them. That was on the road as well. You know, they'd go away from home and they would pick up points. So that's the reason, a major reason why they finished halfway up the table. And bar that poor run of form at the back end of last season, where they kind of just fell away, they would have finished in the upper reaches of you know, eighth, ninth place. So it was a shame the way that last season ended, but they haven't really kind of taken that attitude as such into this season, and they've struggled really to hold on to leads, and they've taken the lead a number of times. They've done the hard bit, and then they've dropped points. They've dropped 10 points, in fact, from winning positions this season. It all started when they took on Stoke at the Hawthorns in August, and they're on a good run of form. They've won a couple of games, they've progressed in the Carabao Cup, and then it all goes wrong with Hegazi and Ben Foster making that mistake. And from there, they've dropped points pretty frequently, unfortunately. The Watford pegged them back when they were 2-0 up. Newcastle did the same most recently, and then on the road as well, they've failed to close games out, and they've conceded quite late against Tottenham at Wembley and against Leicester at the King Power Stadium. So largely, these are teams that they really should be winning games against, teams that they should be beating, particularly you know, the likes of Newcastle and Watford and Stoke are all going to be around them at the end of the season, most likely, and they've all been on home soil as well. So that's the one thing that's really frustrated me about Albion's campaign so far, and we'll be hoping that we see a kind of an upturn in results, and of course just an ability to see out games at the back end of matches in the second half of the season.
Okay, so that's it from us for Woodman Corner this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. We've got a big treat for you next week. It's a great interview with Liam Ridgewell, who'll talk through some dressing room stories from the Roy Hodgson days and a bit more about what he's doing in MLS at the moment. So thank you for joining us, Woodman Corner. If you like it, tell your friends. If you don't, get in touch with us, tell us why we're rubbish.
Cheers.